Welcome to the Mothering Wildlife Podcast. I'm Elizabeth, a zoo professional working full-time and also a mom to two little boys. I know firsthand how challenging the zoo field can be, physically, mentally, and emotionally. I also know how much work it is to raise tiny humans. I want to share the stories of those moms who are out there caring for wildlife and caring for kids. My hope is that this podcast can build a community of moms, sharing ideas and supporting each other because we're all in this together. We're all just mothering wildlife. Hi, and welcome back to another episode of the Mothering Wildlife Podcast. My name is Elizabeth, and I'm your host. A couple of episodes back, I think I maybe mentioned that I was going to probably be taking a little bit of time off from the podcast, that I had some big life changes going on. And yes, I am here to say that I probably will be taking about 4 to 6 weeks off because my family and I are moving from Florida back to Texas. I say back to Texas because my husband and I are both from Texas. That's where we grew up. And we originally moved to Florida together in 2010 so that we both could work at the Naples Zoo. We were at Naples for a few years. We had our first son when he was a year of age. We kind of thought it might be nice to be back in Texas with our family since we had a one-year-old. And in 2016, we moved from Florida to Texas the first time again. I worked at the Dallas Zoo for a couple of years. I loved working at the Dallas Zoo. It's a great zoo. However, we didn't love living in the Dallas area, which was bittersweet because my mom was up there, my dad too. My family was up in Dallas. We just really did not think that living just south of Dallas where we were in this little tiny town was what we wanted for life. It wasn't our thing. And so I had an opportunity in 2018 to move back to the Naples Zoo, and I took it, and we've been now back in Florida since 2018. So now we're going back to Texas. We've gone back and forth twice now, a lot, feels like forever. But you know, the main reason why we decided to move is that our parents are getting older, and we really didn't want to regret spending the next 10 years or so far away from them. It's really challenging to fly back and forth between Florida and Texas all the time. It's also really expensive to fly a family of four. It was really easy when they were under two and they flew for free, but that doesn't happen anymore. So we just hate that we are missing out on so many family functions, primarily around the holidays. And you know, as your children get older, it kind of becomes important to you want to be around family. I want them to grow up with their cousins. It just is what it is. I didn't think I'd be moving back to Texas. I definitely didn't think that would be our next stop after Florida. If our families weren't in Texas, I don't know that it would be Texas. It would probably be somewhere else, but that's where we're going. I am super excited about where I will be working. I'll share a little bit about them probably when I return. They are very supportive of me doing this podcast. They think it's a great thing. So I know that I'll be able to talk a little bit about them. But it actually is not a traditional zoo setting, which is where the majority of my career has been. The facility is zoo adjacent. They have rhinos and giraffe, and I'm really excited about the leadership there, and I'm really excited about the role and the position that I'll have. So it'll be a nice change from what I've been doing, but also pretty similar to what I've been doing. So I'm very, very, very excited about it. We'll be living a little bit north of San Antonio, which is in central Texas, south central Texas. It's a hill country of Texas, if you're familiar. And I'm actually really excited about that as well, because it is a beautiful part of Texas. So again, taking some time off. As some of you may know, moving your family halfway across the United States is not easy. I just need some time to be able to truly focus in on what needs to happen. We already have a place to live. I need to get Silas signed up for school to start in August. I need to find a daycare. My husband needs to find a job. We need to figure out how we're getting all of our stuff to Texas from Florida and what that looks like. So there's some things that have to be figured out before the end of May when we actually roll out of Naples and drive over to Texas, which will be a long 24-hour drive, if not more, I'm sure. So there's some things that I need to do, and I just don't think that focusing on the podcast at the same time is going to be easy. So not that this podcast is super time intensive, because it's really not, and I love doing it, but I just want to take one less thing off my plate. So anyway, I will be back. I definitely have some mom stories already recorded, and they'll be waiting to come back whenever I come back. Like I said, it could be about 4 to 6 weeks, so we'll see. Hopefully you'll be waiting for me. I really would appreciate and love if you guys come and join me again after this little break that we're going to have. And I'll try to be a little bit more active on social media so that you guys will know whenever we're going to come back and whenever the podcast will be rocking and rolling again. So with that being said, we do have a mom today to talk to. I spoke with Carly Hornberger, who is a primate keeper at Smithsonian's National Zoo recently. Her and I talked about a lot of things postpartum, actually. We talked about how hard it is, which it is. You know, we talked about how at the end of your leave, you often feel really excited to go back, but then you also feel really guilty about leaving your kid. Like, it's this weird sort of like dichotomy. You know, you've just gotten into a rhythm of being a mom, and then you get thrown back into work. You're trying to figure out how mom life and work life kind of mesh together. Do they mesh together? Can they mesh together? There's a lot of things to figure out after you go back to work. There's a lot of things to figure out after you have a child. So we talk a lot about that period of time. You know, she's a primate keeper. So we actually talk a little bit about some of the training that she's done with the gorilla for some really cool maternal behaviors. And we talk a little bit about, you know, as a primate keeper, primates and working with them and being a mom, are there similarities? You know, do they recognize what's going on in their human counterparts? It's an interesting conversation. So I really loved it. I hope that you guys will enjoy the conversation as well. So without further ado, please enjoy my conversation with Carly Hornberger from Smithsonian's National Zoo. Hi, Carly. Thanks so much for joining me today. I'm really excited to get to talk to you and to hear your story. So welcome to the podcast.
Awesome. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, I'm excited that you're here. Let's start a little bit first with some about your professional career, what you've been doing, what species you work with, kind of a little bit about what that is for you.
Sure. So I got started in this career by volunteering. To go back a little bit, my husband and I were living in California. And then he ended up getting a job back here in Maryland, which is where we're originally from. So in California at the time, I was working at a veterinary office, kind of doing like front of house stuff, but also like giving vaccines and like doing all that fun stuff. And so obviously I quit that job when we moved back here, and I was just looking for something to do. Yeah. So I just started volunteering at the National Zoo. And which I volunteered, I think, for about 6 months. And then they were looking for interns. And I fell in love with zookeeping, like day one. So I was like, yep, I want to intern. This is what I want to do. Volunteered, I think, for another 6 months. And then a position opened in the primate unit. And I just applied. I got super lucky.
Awesome.
And got started right away at
cool.
the Smithsonian. Yeah. And I've only been with the primate unit. I have like gone behind the scenes in other areas, but at Smithsonian we're specialized. So if you work with primates, you only work with primates.
Gotcha.
If you work a small mammal house, it's only small mammals. If,
yeah.
You know, so on and so forth. And that's where I've been now. It's for like 6 years. Crazy.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. What species do you guys have?
We have Western Lowland gorillas. We have hybrid and Bornean orangutans. We have Siamang. We have ringtail lemurs, black and white ruff lemurs. We have Allen swamp monkeys, hermit crabs, and we have Norway rats right now. We don't have any, but we are trying to get some more. Our last set just passed away.
Huh.
So hopefully soon we'll have more.
Very cool. So you're pretty heavy on the great apes, it sounds like. You guys have gorillas and orangutans. That's awesome. We just got orangutan here at the Naples Zoo back in the fall. And They are like my favorites to sit out there and watch. I have a little guy who's like three, and it's just like, it's cool. And as a mom then to see him with his mom, I'm like, oh my God, they're so similar. But yeah, it's really cool.
I know. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's neat. Well, nice. I don't know that I have been up to, no, actually I have been up to the National Zoo. It's just been a few years, but yeah, I just remember it being very lovely. So very cool. So which is your favorite to work with? If you, I mean, that's like asking which is your favorite kid, right? I can't ask. It's hard to ask a zookeeper for that.
I mean, they all have things that I love. I think overall, probably at least my favorite species that we have that we work with are the siamangs.
Yeah.
I just, especially Ronnie and Bradley, they were there like as when I was a volunteer. And I don't know. They just have a special place in my heart.
Yeah.
But yeah, overall, I mean, they're all great. It's hard to pick one.
It is. No, I agree. It's an unfair question because it's really hard to pick. Cool. So tell me a little bit then about your child, because we're going to talk a lot about being a mom and a zoo mom or wildlife mom. So tell me a little bit about your child.
Sure. He is now 9 months. He is my first. His name is Theoden. We call him Theo for short.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, he is amazing. he's just kind of started that fun, like, army crawl thing that they do. And he's definitely, I mean, he's so fast. I don't know how he got to be so fast doing that army crawl, but we're doing that. We're starting to, like, pull ourselves up and eating solid food. So we're kind of hitting that really fun, I think, at least, part where he's just really exploring the world and everything around him.
Yeah, no, I agree. That's that age where it's like milestone after milestone after milestone, like cool things, you know, like you said, we're crawling, we're eating, like exploring. Like, I love that age. It's before, it's like when they're first starting to get mobile, but they're still easy to keep a hold of. And it's right before they like get like really mobile, where they are like walking all over the place and they don't stay put anymore.
Can't wait.
Yeah, can't wait. So nice. So yeah, so you've got a little. It's been a while since I talked to someone who has one that's like under the age of one. So that's fun. So then, you know, you were obviously pregnant working as a primate keeper. Tell me a little bit about how that is to be a pregnant zookeeper and also working with, you know, great apes and the species that you work with.
Sure. I'm going to preface this by saying I did not like being pregnant.
Oh, no, not everyone does. That's totally.
Yeah, it was.
It is hard.
It was very hard. You know, the first trimester, I got sick. Like, I was so sick. That nausea. Yeah. Which I know people talk about morning sickness, but it takes you out.
Yeah.
It's awful. So then on top of that, having that nausea and working with the primates with the regurg and just the smell the gorillas, you know, produce and poop.
Yeah.
Just everything. There was one day, it was just so much. I think too, our horticulture team was putting mulch down or something. And it was just so strong. And on top of all the animal smells, I started crying. I was like, I gotta go home. And I had to leave. Like, it was awful. Ugh. I felt so bad, but it was just, it's so much. But like once I got a hold of the nausea in the first trimester, it was fine. You know?
Yeah.
That part was easy. But then as the pregnancy progressed, second trimester was fine. You know, once I kind of hit that point where I couldn't really lift heavy things, luckily my team a lot of people got really mad when I would try to do things, you know, so I had a lot of people like, oh, I need a bale of hay, and they would run and be like, no,
nope. I'll get it for you. Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of our volunteers, same thing. They're like, sit down. It's like, okay, fine. The biggest hurdle, I think, for me at least, after all that was I developed gestational diabetes. And I am not a fan of needles.
Oh, no.
Yeah. At all. And I remember, I love my curator, Becky. She's so kind to me. And she knows how terrible I am with all this and then having to go through all of that stuff. Because they wanted to diagnose me because, like, I did the one-hour test at, mm-hmm. you know, what is it, 20 weeks? I don't even remember. And I failed horribly. I think my blood sugar was, like, 3-something.
Oh, my
goodness. They want it under, like, 140 or something. So they were just going to diagnose me right then and there. And I refused. I did not want to believe that I had it.
Yeah.
So I remember calling them and demanding to do the 3-hour test, thinking that if I could pass that,
right,
we're done. which that 3-hour test was miserable.
Oh, it's a long time.
Oh, it's awful.
Yeah.
Which technically I did pass it. But again, that first hour, it was really high. And so they're like, honey, you have gestational diabetes.
Oh, no.
So, I called the doctor at work demanding to do a 3-hour test and sobbing, and Becky let me go home. And then I did the 3-hour test, failed it. And I was also at work that day and sobbed, and Becky let me go home. And I just, it was awful. And then we had a white sheet given who they believed was diabetic. So we had like the little glucometer.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember me and my best friend Val, who worked with me, just sitting in the office trying to prick my, I couldn't do it.
Man. It's hard to do it on yourself.
She was trying to do it. I was crying. Everybody was crying. I couldn't do it. It was awful. And after all that, my insurance did approve me having the, like the one that goes in your arm, mm-hmm. the continuous thing.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And then once I had that, it was smooth sailing. But other than the food, I had to keep reminding myself to snack because you have uh-huh. to like constantly be eating to keep your blood sugars kind of level. You know, I wasn't able to eat a lot of like the things I wanted to eat, like donuts and all the other fun stuff.
Ugh, that would be hard for me too.
Yeah.
And, you know, zookeepers, there's constantly things in the break room.
Oh, there's always snacks. Everybody's like, oh, we're going to go get a soda.
Right.
Like, I can't have a soda.
Enjoy your soda. Yeah.
It's like, I just got to sit here and drink my water. But the third trimester, I'm trying to think now. I can see that roll through the third trimester. The third trimester was fine. I think I worked up until... Because of the gestational diabetes, I was eventually put on not insulin, but an oral pill because my like fasting levels kept getting higher and higher as we got closer and closer mm-hmm. to 40 weeks. And because they had placed me on that medication, they're like, oh, honey, you have to be induced.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, oh, my
Great.
God.
Yeah.
Fine. And then so we got scheduled for that. It was a Friday, I think it was scheduled for. So I had worked up, I think it was, that was 39 weeks. I think it was my induction. So I worked up to 38 weeks and I was going to just keep going, but I was like, you know what? I'm going to take mm-hmm. the week because I don't know what a hospital stay is even going to look like.
Yeah.
So I left after like the Friday I had that weekend off and I was like, today's my last day. And Becky was like, yep. See you in a little bit. So I took that week and then my induction got postponed and then I was crying some more because I was so done just being pregnant. And then I was in the hospital. It got rescheduled and then I was in the hospital for a week. Because it was not a pretty induction. I was at like ground zero. Nothing was going on when they got me there. they started with the pills, and like it was slow going for a while. They kept trying to put that balloon in and it'll work. Oh, it was awful. And then they finally were just like, okay, well, we're going to go to Pocosin. That got started and things are moving along, but then Theo's heart wasn't doing great. And so they would turn it down, but then my body wasn't doing what it was supposed to be. It was just back and forth, back and forth. So I got to the hospital, I think it was Saturday night. So that was Sunday, Monday, Tuesday. Tuesday. They were finally like, okay, like nothing, we have to move this along. It's not healthy for you. Been on Pocosin now for days.
Yeah.
Like, so we had to go to C-section, which, I hemorrhaged a little bit and there was a little bit of panic. I had a panic attack. They had to like dope me up because I was freaking out.
Yeah.
But other than that, like Theo was great. He came out crying right away. He looked great. Everything was wonderful with him. Like after that, it was fine. And then I just stayed a couple more days in the hospital. So we were there almost a week. I think it was like 6 days.
That's rough.
Oh, it was an experience.
That is rough, though. I feel like, you know, sometimes people just assume that like, oh, you go and you have your baby and you're done. But like, there's such a variety of ways that you can bring this child into this world. And sometimes it doesn't always go the way you want it to be planned. And that's rough. Yeah, it's hard. Yeah.
I mean, I went in like being loosey-goosey. I was like, all I want, like, I want my baby to survive and I want me to survive. Like, I don't care.
Most important things. Out. Yeah.
But it's all these little things you never really you think about. But yeah, it was fine. The other kicker for my whole pregnancy was my husband and I, we kept it secret. Nobody knew in our family. No one knew other than like both of our jobs because you know, they had to know.
Yeah.
So I kept getting worried that people would come to the zoo because Theo was born in July, so it was getting to be springtime. And luckily, I didn't really show until like 7-8 months.
Oh, man.
I mean, I was wearing like, you know, scrub shorts most of the time, scrub pants. So unless you really knew me, you probably just assumed I put on a lot of weight. So I kept getting worried that somebody would show up and be like, what the heck? So that was fun.
I bet. That's just like an added thing in the back of your head all the time. Watch what you say. Watch what you do.
I got so nervous because it would ruin my surprise.
Were they surprised when it actually happened?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
We threw a little brunch. Mm-hmm. It was 2 weeks after Theo was born. And we invited because both of our parents are divorced. So we had like the moms come over first.
Yeah.
And then we had the dads come over later in the day. And I'm pretty sure my mom almost had a heart attack. Zach's mom, my husband, she almost fainted. She couldn't handle anything. And then the dads kind of like the same thing. They're just both like, what? Like, nobody knew.
Surprise.
Grandbabies.
Grandbabies. Yay. Well, geez. Yeah. That sounds like, that's a rough time to like start off motherhood in. Like welcome to motherhood, a week in the hospital, you know, now you've had a C-section, which is so hard to recover from sometimes. I mean, it's such a major surgery. I saw something the other day. It was like the C-section is one of the only surgeries where we require people to be up and moving like 6 hours afterwards and take care of another human being. And I was like, God, you're right. Think about any other time you might go and have any sort of surgery. You know, afterwards are expected and able to, hopefully not everyone, rest and you're recovering, but no, not when you have a C-section, you've got a baby, you've got to like try to feed and like cuddle and be with. And it, after you've had this major abdominal surgery, it's hard.
That's awful.
Yeah, it's hard. So were you able to take time off from the zoo?
Yes. The Smithsonian, I think it was 2 years ago, they have a paid parental leave now.
Nice.
And that was for 12 weeks. And because I had the C-section, I was also able to take, I think, up to 8 weeks of like using my sick leave to recover from that, in addition to the 12 weeks.
That's nice.
Yeah. So I didn't use eight. I think I used 6 weeks. So I was out for 18 weeks home with Theo, which was amazing.
Yeah.
And I was still getting paid the whole time.
Yeah, that's really amazing. A rarity in this country, which is really great for you.
Yeah. So I'm very grateful for that because I needed it.
Yeah.
Those first few weeks, even like the first 2 months, like that, honestly, one of the hardest things I've ever done.
Yeah, same.
Yeah. So,
yeah, I mean, I heard the term when I was freshly postpartum with my first, the fourth trimester. And I heard that term and I was like, yep, that makes sense, because those first 3 months really after giving birth and having a child and changing your family. And it's a game changer.
Oh yeah.
It is one of the hardest things I ever did. I didn't expect it to be that hard. I don't know why. Like, you don't know what you don't know, but like, yeah, I mean, it is very hard. And then it's very frustrating to feel like, you know, some moms don't even get to take some time, and how do they manage? I don't know how they manage.
Yeah, I really don't.
By the time your leave was coming to an end, were you looking forward to going back to work, or was it kind of like bittersweet?
Kind of both. Like, I was very excited to go back and see the animals. I did miss them dearly. But I was also, I felt guilty.
Yeah.
At, like, leaving Theo. And like a weird, I don't even know, like that weird mom guilt that just creeps up all the time over like random little things.
Weird things, yeah.
Because the Smithsonian has a daycare, which we were able to get into.
Nice.
Luckily, we had a Zach had a coworker who, she has two sons now. But she was like, oh, you have to start looking for daycares before baby's even there, which thank God she said something, because I didn't know that.
Yeah.
And so we were able to get all that settled. But the way they worked was like they kind of staggered babies, because there's only eight babies in his class. So we weren't the first ones to go, because it goes by birthdays. So I think he started going to daycare in October. So he was like three and a half months.
Yeah.
And that first day dropping him off, like the guilt, I was just like, oh my God, I just abandoned my child.
Right.
Even though you didn't. Like, I don't know. It's very weird. But so that was kind of like that sensation kind of coming back. Like, I wouldn't be home. I'm going to be away.
Yeah.
If there's like an emergency, and I'm also working with dangerous animals. So I was like, oh, what if I lose my hand? Why would I lose my hand? I don't know. But what if I did? How am I going to hold my son?
Right. Oh, the lovely, like, intrusive thoughts that pop into mom's heads.
So fun.
So fun. They're like, don't make sense at all. But yet we stress and panic about them.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, it was interesting too, because like I had just kind of gotten into a rhythm of being a mom.
Yeah.
And then I had to be thrown back into work. So then I was trying to juggle going back to work and having that work life, but then also coming home and having like mom life.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a lot of emotions being thrown around.
Yeah.
A lot of tears.
Yeah.
But also, like, you know, it was very happy to see everybody. Everybody was so nice when I came back to work.
And yeah,
it was like I never even left, even though, you know, we had a gorilla birth. We had so many things going on. And I was like, oh yeah, all these new things that I have to like try to relearn.
Yeah.
But also not.
It is a very weird, it feels like a very surreal time. Both of my like returns to work, like they just feel so surreal. It's like a weird life. Like, you knew stuff was happening at the zoo while I was gone, but it's like when you come back to work, it's like, okay, well, did it really happen or did it not? Like, it's just this really weird, surreal, like, dreamland, I felt like, to come back and be like, things have been continuing without me, but now I'm here and expected to know it. And I'm walking back into my old life as a keeper, kind of, but yet I'm not walking back into that keeper life the same person. Like, it's this weird, weird state, I feel like. It's hard to come back from being on leave, especially when, like you said, you get into your routine as a mom, and then all of a sudden, bam, it changes overnight. Like,
oh yeah,
now you have to completely change mission, and the things you were doing for the past 3 to 4 months, they no longer exist. So now we're a working mom and things are 100% different. And that is really hard to wrap your brain around.
Yeah. And then like trying to find a rhythm for like pumping on top of that. And I mean, I think, well, I still don't really know what I'm doing when it comes to pumping.
No one ever does.
So, and that's also like one of the fun things I think I've had to like remind myself and kind of learn is just like, there's never going to be like a set schedule.
Yeah.
And you just kind of have to go with the flow as much as you can and just kind of relax.
Yeah.
That's the big one. Just kind of have to relax.
Yeah. You do have to like relax into it. And like you said, accept the fact that you're going to have to go with the flow, because if I try to be too rigid, then I'm just going to stress myself out in trying to keep to this schedule that is totally not like it has to be flexible. Yeah. Like I can't keep to something. It can't be rigid at all. Yeah. Yeah. Is it hard for you to find places to pump at the zoo? Do they have areas set aside, or, you know, so, I mean, people pump in all over. I've heard so many strange places that people have been pumping.
So at the ape house itself, where like the gorillas and the orangutans are, there isn't really a good spot. In the past, keepers, you know, had just used restrooms. We do have an office which has a door, but you know, that's where our computers are, where people write the reports and stuff. So that's a little hard. At our other building in our unit, Think Tank, there is a private office like upstairs, which I use all the time, like, especially when I'm working at that building, because there's a computer in there so I can write my reports and respond to emails, which I love that. We have a few other buildings where we keep the lemurs and the siamangs, where if you're working that line, usually by yourself. And sometimes I'll just pump while making enrichment. I do have the willows, like the portable ones. Which I usually use those like while working the great ape lines, like while I'm cleaning. Those have been working out pretty well. And then I try to just do once a day with those because I know they're not the best. And then Small Mammal House, which is kind of like our neighbor, they have a nursery for, well, a nursery for animals, but we've been using it as a pumping room. So they've been very kind in letting me, you know, barrel through Small Mammal House a couple days to use that. And another keeper is, her son's a little bit older than mine, so she's also pumping. So we've been sharing the room, which has been working out fine, but they have like, they've been using that as a dedicated space for pumping. And that's been working out really well.
Yeah. It's nice. That is, at least you've been able to find options, you know. It's sometimes really hard, to find some places regardless of where you work at. I mean, it's not just the zoo field. I feel like there's a lot of other fields and businesses in the United States that have a hard time providing a space for moms. It's just that mental gymnastics of like constantly, I feel like, trying to figure out when is the next opportune time for me to do this, knowing that I, you know, have to do it a couple times a day while I'm at work. You know, what can I finish before I actually have to do this again? And what I'm not gonna be able to get to. That's the struggle.
It's a lot.
It is a lot. It is a lot. So are you still in the season of sleepless nights? Do you feel like you're getting any more rest?
Definitely getting more rest than I had been.
That's good.
Theo probably gets up at least once a night. Usually like 3 to f- like between 3 and 4 a.m. he gets up. He goes to bed at like 7-ish. So a pretty good chunk of sleep, but I don't go to bed at 7. Yeah. I go to bed at like 9 or 10, so yeah. I'm getting a little less sleep. Feed him, and he goes right back to sleep. And then I'm always in this awkward spot because it could be like 4:30. Mm-hmm. I have to be at work at 6:30. I'm like, do I just stay up?
Oh, yeah.
Do I go back to bed? I usually go back to bed, and then I wake up groggier than I should be because yeah. I only got an hour, 45 minutes right. of sleep. But so far, we've been doing pretty good. We've gone a couple nights where we slept through. And those are always amazing. Yeah. They're few and far between, but I treasure them.
Yes, exactly. I always wake up in a panic, like, oh my God, we didn't wake up last night. Like,
yeah.
Is he alive? What day is it? Is he alive? What's going on?
100%. Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. I still am that mom that, like, I will just get up and go put my hand on their back and be like, okay, they're still breathing. Like, it just, you know, if I just wake up normally in the middle of the night and I'm like, I'm just going to go check. I can't not do it. Like, it just, oh, it's that anxiety, I guess.
Yeah, I know. It's awful.
It is. Do you think working around the great apes while pregnant, this might be a really silly question. Do you think that they picked up on anything that was going on with you? I had one keeper told me that she had a friend who worked at Great Apes who was in labor cleaning before she went to the hospital. And their male silverback gorilla was just kind of like creeping on her and was hanging close. And she's like, I really think that like he could sense something going on. And so I'm just curious, those who, you know, work with great apes, because we see so many similar behaviors and, you know, share so much mm-hmm. of our genetic DNA, that I wonder if they pick up on things like that.
Well, overall, I'm going to say if they did notice anything, they didn't really like show it to me.
Yeah.
The animals that I am like primary trainer on, so I have a really good repertoire with, there were a few moments where I would be like closer to the mesh, especially like when I started to show more.
Yeah.
Kabibi, who is a gorilla, she once like kind of reached out to like touch my stomach.
Yeah.
Which was super cute.
Yeah.
But that only happened once. I was just like, what is this? And then, like, it was done. And then a female orangutan, Batang, kind of did the same thing.
Yeah.
She just kind of gently kind of stuck her fingers through and like touched and yeah. then was just kind of like, huh.
Huh.
Batang has a son, Red. So I don't know if she was like, oh, Ophelia.
Yeah.
Kabibi does not have any offspring yet, but maybe one day she will. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. She was just curious. But Kalea, another female gorilla in the same troop, had just had Zara. So there was an infant kind of floating around and a pregnancy that they were mm-hmm. also dealing with. So it was kind of fun being pregnant at the same time as yeah. another gorilla.
Yeah, that is cool.
She put me to shame because, you know, we came in one day and there was the baby. I was like, man. No big deal.
No big deal. Had a baby overnight.
Just super cash.
Yeah, that's funny. I feel like animals are like that sometimes. It's like all of a sudden, an hour, you know, check on them, and an hour later, they got a baby on the ground. You're like, what?
Yeah. They're just like, yeah, you know, it's just a regular Tuesday. Like, oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I find the behaviors of great apes like super fascinating, especially since becoming a mom, like I was saying earlier, and watching like our youngest orangutan interact with his mom, and to see the way she also interacts with him, and just the communication that's going on between them seems, you know, trying not to be anthropomorphic, but seems very similar mm-hmm. to sometimes the communication that I'm trying to, you know, have with my youngest son, who is also 3. Like, it seems so similar to me. It's just fascinating. It's just that part of animal behavior is just fascinating to me.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Do you think that being a primate keeper, you know, the past few years or so, and then now having a child of your own, have you been able to draw upon those skills with your own offspring?
Yeah. You know, working with the primates, you know, they're so incredibly smart.
Yeah.
And they know, like, when they're just pushing your buttons.
Yeah.
So, like, I've kind of, from them, just ride it out and just got to be patient. And maybe eventually they'll shift or, mm-hmm. you know, you like, they'll come over eventually. So, keeping it kind of loosey-goosey. But that, I think that's just kind of also my parenting style. Like, yeah. I'm not super rigid.
Yeah.
You know, you got to play it by ear. We let Theo... I mean, obviously, we're not letting him play with knives or anything, but, like, you know, if he wants to explore a living room, go
yeah,
for it.
Yeah.
We'll watch you. Like, that's kind of kind of how I do primates, too. Like, oh, you don't want to go into that enclosure? That's fine. What about this one? You know, just keeping it, whatever they want to do is fine, as long as we're not going to hurt each other or ourselves.
Yeah.
It's actually been working out pretty well, I think.
No, I think there's something to be said for that, especially with children, because I feel like sometimes as a society, we have a tendency to hover over our children too much and not let them get that opportunity to explore and especially do something that's risky. You know, like mm-hmm. you said, we're not letting them play with knives, but like there is a certain really healthy level of risk that I think that kids need to be involved in and get into, and especially while they're exploring. So I think there is something to be said for being able to like sit back and just see what unfolds, see what happens.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We're the same way in my family. I try to kind of be like, okay, I'm going to see how the 3-year-old who is into everything, he's going to tackle this problem. And it looks like he might fall off of that chair that he's standing on, but like, let's just see if he can figure out where his limits are. And like, he's been really great at like listening to his body and figuring out like, oh no, I don't know that that's a good idea. And I'm like just shocked that like this seems to be so innate, and I didn't have to tell him that, be careful. He is being able to like figure it out based on like what his experiences have been. It's fascinating. It's interesting.
Yeah, it is. It's a really fun part of psychology is like that innate learning ability is so cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely is. Coming back as a mom now to work, is it anything like you thought it would be being a working parent and everything that comes along with trying to juggle work life and home life? Like, is it harder or easier? Probably not easier, but
no, it's definitely work.
Yeah,
it's just, you know, trying to find those moments where I can just take for myself.
Yeah,
has been. That I think to me has been the biggest hurdle. I love my alone time.
Same.
Pre-baby.
Same.
And now like post-baby, there have been a couple days where I've just been like, oh, he's so needy.
Yes.
But, like, I know, like, but I'm here to care for him. Like, I know he needs me.
Yeah.
And it's like, again, like going back to that mom guilt, I'm like, it's fine. So like kind of going, like trying to reset my brain from work mode to coming home and like kind of going into mom mode, which is also kind of work mode.
Yeah. A different like, work. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just, that's been the hardest part, I really think, on top of, you know, just the mental gymnastics of like pumping schedules, mm-hmm. feeding schedules, diapers, like all that. What's going on at daycare? I don't know. Like, he's not getting sick. Like, you know,
yeah.
It's a lot. Always constantly going through my head. Just constant. It's not unexpected, but definitely different than kind of what I had imagined.
Yeah, it is a lot all of a sudden. Then I feel like you start to like hold in your head.
Mm-hmm.
And then as they get older, it's like, now I have to start writing things down because I can't remember anything else about my life because it's all full of like kids stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I feel like coming back to work was, it was not, yeah, it wasn't exactly what I expected it to be busy, and I expected it to be like, you know, different and challenging, but like, I didn't expect the like additional like stuff that would be up in my head that I was trying to keep track of up there. I think that was the biggest challenge.
Yeah.
Because it's it, like you said, it's the daycare, it's the, you know, juggling all the things that have to happen. Also like the doctor visits that are coming up, especially with like an infant, you know, they're all the time. It seems like, and getting them scheduled. And then I will tell you that daycare is the one thing that I always let fall off my radar. I'm like, they didn't say anything bad today. Nothing. I don't, it great. I'm not going to worry about it. I'm going to focus on other things.
That's a good way of viewing it.
Yeah. They said he was happy and fine. All right, cool. Then we're going to just go home and call it a day.
Yep.
Yep. Yep. Yep. Let's see here. So what are some of the things in your career that you're the most proud of accomplishing?
Oh,
now it's like interview style here.
It is. Let's see. Overall, also Kabibi, who I mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
She and Baraka, our silverback, have a breeding recommendation from the SSP. So as her primary trainer, you know, we have been kind of doing like some of those like maternal training behaviors. Luckily, when I started, like everybody has been trained to like sit on the scale and injection trained, like all of the other stuff. But so I've been able to really focus on like ultrasound training. And like all that kind of fun part. So she's been so good at it, training those new behaviors that like, she's so smart. It's crazy.
Yeah,
like
that's cool.
I've been able to train her like to stand up, but also push her stomach up against the mesh. So can get like all up in there with the ultrasound probe. She doesn't care about the ultrasound gel, which is also really, really nice. Just all those fun little behaviors where, you know, eventually if she does get pregnant, we're going to be rock stars.
Yeah.
You know, she's going to be so ready. She's seen Kalea have both Moki and Zara now. So I think like she kind of knows what to expect. It's just getting her there.
Yeah. No, that will be super helpful. She'll be ready from the get-go to participate in all of that prenatal care.
Exactly.
Yeah. Do you feel like now with a young, you know, a young child and trying to juggle all that, you think there's anything at work that you won't be able to participate in fully because, you know, you're just in a season of life with a little kid and you know, you might have to take a step back on some stuff, or have you maybe not encountered that yet?
Yeah, I have. So when I was out on maternity leave, we had a surprise baby, with one of our swamp monkeys. And unfortunately mom did not take care of Edgar. His name's Edgar.
Oh.
she abandoned him.
Oh,
so
no.
Yeah. So, the team had to like step up and they were there 24/7 and like all this other stuff. And you know, when I was coming back, they were still kind of in the hand rearing part. People were still staying like overnight, which obviously I couldn't do because I had to go home and take care of my own overnight. Yeah. So like not being able to volunteer, especially for like those, like that's hard.
Yeah, it is.
Hand rearing is like insane. So not being able to like really help my team during like that kind of situation, because I had to go home and take care of my own child. I did feel, again, I felt the guilty. And I felt bad. And just kind of other things like that, to like where you would need to volunteer to like your free time to go do something. Like I just can't do that stuff anymore, which I would do in the past. Mm-hmm. And I've had to get better at learning how to say no. Because I like to be helpful at work and like, oh, I'm sorry, I can't do that because I have to go pump, or like, sorry, I can't do that because I have to leave at 3 to go pick up the from daycare. Like, all those fun little things of just not being able to do the extra things.
Yeah. No, I feel like I always have like some little degree of like FOMO because I like to be involved and I am always like the first to volunteer to help do something. And then once I had kids, it's like, oh, it's not just you, Elizabeth, anymore. Like, and it's, you know, some part of me, there's a small part of me that is like not resentful because I don't want, it's not, I don't resent my kids, but you feel like, oh, gosh, this really sucks because I would be involved in this if I didn't have this other responsibility, but I do, and I have children and, you know, that's just, this is where my life is right now. This is the season I'm in. I committed myself to being a parent. So, you know, I'm going to have to like have that give and take and, you know, recognize that I can't be involved with this opportunity. And as much as I can be sad about it, which is fine, I just can't. But I still feel like I'm missing out. And then, you know, start the whole cycle of thought all over again. But yeah. Do you think that you'd ever consider another career? Especially now as a parent?
Yes. I mean, I love zookeeping. I really, really do. But, you know, we work weekends, we work holidays, we work all those things. And like right now it's fine because, you know, he's under one.
Yeah, he's little.
We're not really doing too much. And luckily both Zach and I aren't really big like holiday or birthday people. So it's not that big of a deal. But like once, you know, he's older and we're doing like school and sports or, you know, whatever kids do in the next couple of years. You know, I think I would want something with a little bit more, like, routine.
Yeah.
Where I could have, like, every weekend off or in holidays and, like, all that stuff. And also, it's physical. It's physically demanding job. And that's the other thing, too. Like, you know, you're cleaning all day. You're lifting heavy things. You're doing all this stuff. You're dragging trash bags around. And then to come home and then chase a baby around after you've been doing that for 8 hours. Like it's exhausting.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Yeah. Especially when you're running on such little sleep, you know, you're not like restoring your energy reserves to 100% every single night. If that were the case, maybe it'd be easier, but you're not. So like, it is hard to come home and then basically start another job that you're going to do for the next 12 hours all through the night, especially when they're little, and then wake up and go back to a very physically demanding job. I feel you on that one for sure. Do you have any pieces or little nuggets of wisdom or advice that you would give a Zoo mom who has an infant?
Ask for help.
Ask for help. Yes, please. I feel like most people should do that and they don't.
No, like you're always like, I can do it. I got it. Yeah. Just ask for that help.
Ask. I think people would be surprised at how much people would jump in and help them. I think they're so scared, but people want to help. Yeah,
they do. Even like I've reached out to like other keepers in at the zoo that I know are moms who have done it before. And I'm just like, how did you do this?
Yeah.
Like, how are you able to juggle X, Y, and Z with everything else going on in your day? Or, you know, where did you pump? Like all those fun things. And everybody has been so nice and just being like so helpful, wanting to give the advice or, you know, be like, oh, maybe don't do that because of this. Or you know, just all those little things you don't think about. So just ask for the help.
Yeah.
Ask for the advice.
I feel like moms will unite together and come together and support their own. Do you have many moms there?
We do have a lot of moms. Yeah, actually, when I was pregnant, Small Mammals, American Trail. We had at least four or five other women who were expecting or on maternity leave at that point. Like we had a little boom there national. So yeah, a lot of moms and almost everybody had boys, a lot of boys.
That's weird and fun. Well, cool. That's great advice because like I said, I feel like people don't often ask for help enough and like, it's not meant to be done alone. It's, you know, like community is hard to come by these days. You know, it almost sometimes doesn't exist for everyone. And so you're not meant to do it alone. So ask for help. Find the people. Yes. Find the other moms.
And also just be honest. Like, if you had a really rough night, like, just, I've done that too, where I'm just like, look, Theo was up, I swear, like, every other hour. Like, I am exhausted. Like, just being upfront and honest about, like, what you're going through in that moment. Most people are very understanding. Mm-hmm. And they'll be like, okay, why don't you just get through cleaning and then maybe go home and relax. Yeah. I'm like, thank you.
Yes,
you
know, please. Thank
you. It's those things. Like, ask for the help. Be honest.
Yeah.
And it'll all work out.
Yeah, agree. Because if you can get that help and you can get, you know, something satisfied and you can get the sleep or you can get whatever you need done, you're just going to be able to show up a little bit better than you would be if you hadn't asked for help at all. And that's the ultimate goal, you know, like, Well, cool. That's great advice. Thank you, Carly. Thank you so much for being on the podcast. Thanks for coming on and sharing your story. I really appreciate it.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. All right. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Carly. Many thanks to her for coming on the podcast. Thank you for sharing your story. Thanks for coming on and speaking. Thank you so much, Carly. I really appreciate it. I really love her piece of advice at the end as well, which is ask for help. It's a piece of advice that I've had a couple other moms give. It's so hard to do and yet so necessary sometimes. And we often fight it so much. But if you can ask for that help, definitely it is something that can be worthwhile because there probably is someone who is willing to help you. So ask, because we're not meant to do it alone. Okay. Again, come back and join me in 4 to 6 weeks. Check my socials. Check the podcast on Facebook at the Mothering Wildlife Podcast. Check on Instagram at Mothering Wildlife. That's where I'll be posting about the return date for the podcast, when the next episode will come after the break. I appreciate you guys sticking around. I know I don't have to explain to you why I need this time in order to move my family. You guys get it. But yeah, thanks for the support and for sticking around. And I will see you again in 4 to 6 weeks. All right, bye. Thanks for listening to the Mothering Wildlife Podcast. I'm your host, Elizabeth Johnson. This podcast is produced by John Rossi. Check out his podcast, Rossafari and Conservation Tales, wherever you listen to podcasts, if you really want to learn all about the amazing people that work in zoos. Theme music by John Rossi and Taylor Isaac Gray. Visit us on Facebook and Instagram at Mothering Wildlife to like and follow us. If you are a mom that works with wildlife and you want to share your story, reach out to me at motheringwildlife@gmail.com.